WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Good evening. You are tuned into another Monday Night Talk program heard here on 95.9. WATD, my name is Kevin Tachi. We have a great show lined up for you, starting with hour number one. As you have become accustomed over the past nearly 10 years, our first segment is usually the State House Report. This week's guest will be State Representative Allison Sullivan. As we try to do when we have the state reps and state senators come on, usually the first couple of months we're trying to get an idea as to what their plans are for the new legislative session. Also, any bills, pertinent bills or legislation that they might be filing. That's what our focus will be with the state representative coming up in just a few moments after we check traffic. Following Representative Sullivan, we will speak with a local business owner, premier sponsor of Monday Night Talk, Richard Rosen. We'll get his take on how things are going at this point in COVID. Yeah, we see a light at the end of the tunnel, but do we know, in fact, if businesses see that same light, if it's illuminating as brightly as some of us feel with this new vaccine and the plan to vaccinate everybody? We'll get his take on it. Hour number two, we have Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan joining us. I call him my co-host, unofficial co-host of Monday Night Talk. He is on so frequently. We'll get a chance to catch up with him in regards to COVID numbers. But I also want to get a chance to ask him how things are going, you know, business as usual. Is the city still seeing the same foot traffic, fielding the same calls, having the same conversations with developers who want to move, relocate to the city, and become a part of the fabric of that community? We'll find out from the mayor when we talk to him at 7 o'clock. And then the final segment of the evening is with Kerry J. Byrne from KJB Trending Hospitalities, kerrybyrne.com. I'm going to chat with him about the recent order that was lifted, the restrictions that were lifted by the governor, by the administration, be able to, you know, dine out beyond 9:30 at night and not have to worry about a curfew. We'll get Kerry's take on it. I know Kerry had been very, very vocal about the fact, why is it that these small mom-and-pop eateries are being somewhat penalized, yet these bigger box stores are not? We'll get Kerry's take on it. Knowing Kerry has been a writer for the Boston Herald as a food guy, I definitely want to get his take on it. And we'll even touch upon the recent article that was in the local scribe, the Patriot Ledger, the Enterprise, about the Facebook group that he created that has seen success, tremendous success. That's all coming up in just a couple of moments. But right now, time for us to find out what's happening out on the roadways one final time. Brought to you on this end by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at BrennanSmokeShopMA.com. With locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raymond Pond, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Wayland.
Well, thanks, Kevin. The expressway northbound is slow from the Braintree split to Freeport Street. The southbound side's an easy ride from top to bottom. 93 still in good shape in either direction between Braintree and Canton. And routes 3 South and 24 South are moving along, heading down to 495. This report is sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control. Millions of people suffer from an addiction to prescription opioids. It's not easy, but there is hope. Recovery is possible. If you or someone you know is struggling, visit cdc.gov/RX awareness. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DeMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right, we have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Compliment, etc., etc.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for our first segment this evening. Joining us for this segment is State Representative Allison Sullivan, representing the 7th Plymouth District. I believe that district is Whitman, Abington, and East Bridgewater. Representative, good to see and talk to you again.
Hi, Kevin. Good to see and talk to you as well.
First conversation of 2021. How did you get through the holidays, and how have things been treating you since being sworn in earlier this month?
You know, I think the holidays were tough on everyone, especially because of COVID and us still being in the middle of a pandemic, a global pandemic at that, and having to minimize the get-togethers for families and loved ones. I know our family felt the difference, along with many throughout the communities that I represent and the Commonwealth. So holidays were good, small, very quiet, not complaining too much there, but it was nice to be able to spend some time with my immediate family, get to see my niece and nephews. And swearing in was right around that corner, and we were able to do it through a Zoom call. I think it was the Google meetings we used for our swearing in, so it was definitely interesting, to say the least.
You know, it hasn't escaped me that what's changed this year from your swearing in is you have a new speaker. What's that like now? You've gone from Speaker DeLeo to Speaker Mariano.
You know, it's only been a couple of weeks into the new session. Granted, Speaker Mariano was elected at the end of last session, and then again in this session. He seems to be very much an open door policy from what I'm hearing. Unfortunately, speaking, we're not physically in the State House still, so it's more of maybe an open Zoom or an open email type of policy when dealing with priorities across our own agendas. So he seems to be that he's willing and ready to work across aisles, across party lines, and to really hit some issues this coming session. It'll be exciting to see a new speaker. Speaker DeLeo, you know, he was there for 10 years, and to have new leadership, it'll be interesting to see what changes will be in place going forward.
How does it feel to be starting your second term? How does it feel?
It feels great. You know, even though we had the global pandemic, my second half of my first term, and really changing how our office works, and we really, really adapted, Curtis and I, and Curtis did a great job in 2020, making sure that we were accessible even in a remote type of setting. But it's very exciting, you know, being able to be in this position and help people and really make a difference in the communities I represent and across the Commonwealth is something that is very hard to describe emotionally.
You know, I think I've asked you this before, and I'll ask you it again. How important is it as an elected official to have somebody who is in charge of what goes on in your office and is kind of a point person like Curtis is?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's critically important, especially in a remote setting, to have somebody to filter calls in the sense of being able to handle some calls that might be more of a standard type of answer and be able to make sure that issues are being addressed at a very efficient time. You know, I'm very blessed, along with a lot of my colleagues, to have great staffers in our office. And Curtis, of course, is a staffer of one in our office. And he does probably the work of seven people and does it well and does it without ever complaining. And he enjoys what he does. You know, he enjoys being able to speak with constituents in our district. And even during the pandemic, we saw cases outside of our quote unquote district that we helped individuals obtain unemployment payments and be able to connect them to the right resources. Because at the end of the day, everyone in this Commonwealth is considered one of my constituents. And so we never shut our doors or turned our back to anybody. And I commend Curtis for having that same mindset going through 2020 and the pandemic that we saw.
How does your vision change from last March, where it was when you tried to plan ahead, there were so many unknowns and so many uncertainties, to here we are at the beginning of 2021. There's a lot of hope on the horizon because of vaccines and knowing that mm-hmm. maybe we're going to actually see the light of day eventually.
Yeah, I mean, in March of 2020, I think a lot of people hoped that it would be a, you know, couple of weeks shut down, a very short time, short period, you know, confinement, in the sense of being able to get back to our normal day lives, right? And here we are in January of 2021, and some people still haven't been able to go back to their quote unquote normal lives. So I think the hope is, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, that there is light shining through, in the sense that we do have a vaccine that's been able to come out. We've been able to administer those vaccines to our first responders here in the communities and other people within that phase one, right? And being able to take that step into hopefully having that light come sooner than later and getting back to some normalcy. You know, Curtis and I were able to attend a Girl Scout meeting. I believe it was in November, December of 2020. And the girls there, they were a great, great group of girls here in Abington. And they were very much concerned with when they can get back to school. They miss being in school. And I hear that from a lot of school-aged children. And it's an issue that we need to kind of, you know, look at and move forward in hopes that we can get these children back into a full in-school, in-person learning.
Are you as a legislator, an elected official, satisfied with how things have been progressing, knowing that they're already kind of looking at mass inoculations, whether they're going to use Gillette Stadium or they're going to use Fenway Park? How do you feel about the whole process?
You know, obviously, like everybody else, you hoped and wished that it would be a quicker, smoother process. But of course, we're all human, right? And this is the first time that a lot of people are dealing with something to this magnitude. I think the administration is doing the best that they can. Nobody's perfect, and we can all critique in the sense of standing where we're standing and being able to say this should have been done differently. I think it's a great improvement in the sense of having Gillette Stadium and Fenway Park be open up to a mass vaccination site. I think that's very important. I think the administration can't also lose sight with the vaccines to also have testing available. And what I've seen is a lot of issues with people unable to receive testing or adequate testing here in our communities or in the South Shore area. You know, Massasoit was one of the kind of key places to be able to get it tested, and they've been closed now for, I think it's been about 3 to 4 weeks. So the nearest, I think, site for our communities is Randolph. And that's the only one that you don't need an appointment for or a doctor's authorization. And I think we need to have way more than just one site for these communities. I think it's important, especially when the administration urges everybody to get tested as often as they can, in the sense if they're exposed to anyone positive or if they're showing any type of symptoms. under the COVID symptom list. So I think it's important that we don't lose sight of having those testing available during the vaccination process.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with the State Representative Allison Sullivan, representing the 7th Plymouth District, and it's great to have regular conversations with the representative. And knowing that's the start of a new legislative session, the fun begins. This is your second go around as far as how the process goes. Where do you stand as far as whether you're going to be supporting bills, signing on the bills, or crafting your own legislation to gain support and submit?
You know, prior to a pandemic in 2020 and the bill filing session of 2021, we'd already have bills filed and co-sponsored at this point. However, we've had an extension to be able to get about an extra month to file legislation. So it's been, I think, a slow go for a lot of people in the sense of filing. We've been where it's usually accessible, where you can meet with colleagues or advocacy programs and or House counsel to be able to draft up legislation. This year, it's a little bit different. They understood the difficulties and the barriers that we would be facing. So they gave us extra time to file and co-sponsor legislation. I intend to refile legislation that I filed 2 years ago. I also intend to file some new legislation as well. Some of the key topic points that I'm going to be looking at this legislative session is domestic violence and sexual assaults type of legislation and how we can improve how we benefit our community around those areas.
Have you had a chance to look for numbers or information as to how domestic violence, how that issue escalated or how the numbers were during a pandemic? Is that what's leading part of your push for this measure?
So a lot of my push is from my own personal experience and working now in my position and seeing the different shortfalls, if you may, boundaries that may come up, inabilities of certain resources, just because of, you know, an array of reasons. However, during a pandemic, the numbers were down. You know, reporting of domestic violence, reporting of sexual assaults were down. And I believe it wasn't because it wasn't happening. And, you know, most of us would be hopeful of that. It's because of survivors of domestic violence didn't feel safe enough to leave a violent home or report a violent incident or be able to seek help or shelter because it was not available during this pandemic. So seeing what we could have done differently now in 2021, looking back in 2020, and what we could have done as a Commonwealth, as a legislative body, and also an administration, to go forward and improve on that so we don't have those type of shortfalls again.
What other legislation are you looking to champion this time around?
So another piece of legislation that has been brought to my attention is voter identification. We're going to be drafting up legislation that would surround a form of voter identification when you go to the polls to vote. I know that with talking with people that are, you know, opposed it or in support of it, some of the issues is around if people can't afford to get an ID, what do we do in those situations? And I think, you know, we can find ways, whether it be through the town halls in the communities or through the registry, to provide a free, if not low cost, identification for voting purposes. And that would alleviate some issues around voter fraud or identity fraud in the voting process.
Yeah, it's been. I've been hearing. It's interesting that this is something you're bringing forth, because looking at the last election, looking at previous elections, you know, social media is one of those things that can be the devil in the detail, where you have people who are amazed that maybe someone isn't showing an ID, not that it's not part of the process. So I like the idea that this is something that you're hoping will gain support and become law.
You know, I think our towns did an amazing job in here in the Commonwealth, and they do an amazing job. And this is not an insult to their jobs and how they conduct their voting areas, right? I think the voting, the toll workers, the voting workers, they did a great job, right? I think it's just to bring a peace of mind to a lot of people. I mean, you need an ID for everything you probably do, in the sense of even going down to see a movie. If you're going to see an R-rated movie, you need to show an ID. Buying cigarettes, buying alcohol, renting a car, renting a hotel room. I mean, all of the things that you need to do in life. I think with voting, we need to also have an identification process.
Again, we're speaking with State Representative Allison Sullivan as we have a few more minutes speaking with her. I don't know if you did it 2 years ago when you were sworn in your first time, and I don't know if you have done it this time, but have you set any kind of legislative goals for yourself where maybe they're just like little personal benchmarks within you, like, oh, I want to make sure that I do this, this, and this, and that I'm able to have this many coffee hours. Every legislator is different. Have you done such a thing as far as setting goals?
So I know Curtis and I, we've been trying to discuss what it will look like in 2021 if we're still in a sense of social distancing, working from home, what it's going to look like for our office hours. You know, unfortunately in 2020, not only did a pandemic hit, but I was also involved in a motorcycle crash, and which caused me to have a broken ankle and sitting on the couch for several weeks. So I wasn't able to do the same things that I would normally be able to do in a normal everyday pre-pandemic or anything else. So we're trying to find ways to be more accessible. I know we've been accessible in a sense of answering emails, answering phone calls, answering text messages, and answering Facebook messages, social media. But being able to have, whether it be a monthly Zoom meeting for each town where people can come in and join in and ask questions, or if they have concerns or issues. I know one of my priorities is to make sure we're more available in that sense, right, to the constituents. I also think that this year it's going to be very important for me to connect with the different town leaderships and to make sure we're having active conversations leading up to a budget debate or different issues here in the district in facing each independent town. So that's definitely another thing that I think is very important that we continue.
As we wrap up, I want to give you an opportunity. Anything we haven't touched upon during our conversation, but you at least want to take a moment to kind of touch upon?
Yeah, so I do just want to say a quick shout out to Bemis Drug and the Cox family. It's very sad that they are closing their doors for good. It's my understanding that it's been in the Cox family since, I believe, 1960s. And prior to that, I believe it was 1901 that it's been a Bemis Drug. So to say Bemis Drug has been a staple in the community of Abington is an understatement. And they will be greatly, greatly missed. I do want to wish, you know, Bill Cox and his family, you know, especially Bill, a happy retirement. It's well-deserved. He's done a lot for our community, and I just want to say thank you.
You know, I know it's interesting, these tough times that we're going through. Now, not to say that what Bemis has gone through has anything to do with COVID, but knowing that we've seen a lot of change, a lot of turnover in the past year, Bemis being the latest one, and knowing that there are restaurants also that have closed their doors because of the pandemic specifically.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's sad to see some of the restaurants that have been closed for good. It's also been very troubling hearing from restaurant owners and the employees about the frustrating issues going around the pandemic and the shutdowns and how it's affected them. So my heart goes out to all of them and hopes that light is so close at the end of the tunnel that we can go back to our old normal and restaurants can go back to full speed and be able to serve the communities that they represent.
And if your constituents want to reach out to you, your office, how can they do that?
The best way at this point right now for us is email is the most effective way to get in contact with us. And that my email is A-L-Y-S-O-N, so Allison.Sullivan, S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N, @mahouse.gov. I also respond to social media messages as well, if that's another way that people want to get in contact with me.
Representative, as always, we thank you for joining us and talking about some of the things that you're working on and your work within your district and up at the State House.
Thank you, Kevin.
We're going to step aside. You're tuned into 95.9 WATD. What are you listening to? Monday Night Talk. There's more on deck in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Adventure Car Hop is the place. place to go for food that's always right.
Way back before rock and roll became golden oldies, cars looked funny. They had protruding bulbous bouffants of chrome up front and chandeliers hanging off the back and long enough to accommodate an entire hockey team with sticks, plus room in the trunk for the dentist chair. Back then, hockey players did not wear masks, consequently did not have teeth. Hockey sticks. I mentioned them because high sticking occurs even in the team Oldsmobile, with results easily imagined.
Windshield broken? I'm Tiny of Tiny and Sons Glass. Yes, your insurance company will pay. 1-888-64-TINYS.
Greetings. This is Laura from the Plymouth County Suicide Prevention Coalition. The mission of our organization continues to promote suicide prevention, intervention, and awareness in our communities, our schools, and throughout the county. You can help by giving of your time, or you can make a donation. To learn more, please visit our website at plymouthcountyspc.org.
Hey, it's John Shea here from Almost Famous Radio, introducing you to independent bands and musicians every Tuesday night, 8 to 10, brought to you by Tiny and Sons Glass. Tomorrow night, we have another full show for you with tons of new music, and we'll be joined on the Tiny stage by singer-songwriter Natalie Jolly. That's tomorrow, 8 to 10, right here on 95.9 WATD, and always streaming at 95.9WATD.com.
Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Well, you know, here we are. How many shows into the new year? And, you know, it's time, ripe, to bring in one of our premier sponsors of Monday Night Talk. Also, someone who is due to do one of my shows. He's overdue to be a host of this program. He's dying to be a host of this program. Richard Rosen is our guest. Sir, how are you?
I'm great, Kevin. How are you this evening?
Good. Richard, of course, the fine proprietor of McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman, right next door, the patio at McGuigan's, two fine establishments right within walking distance of each other. And we love having Richard on, not only to talk about the latest and greatest things that are going on in his two restaurants, but just to talk with him in general, and as to being someone who is a businessman, especially during a pandemic. It hasn't been easy for a lot of folks. And Richard has found a way to persevere. Congratulations that here we are. We're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, Richard.
We're seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train coming at us. I mean, that's even better. I do see light at the end of the tunnel, and I think things are going to get better, hopefully sooner than later. If they can get this vaccination program down and get it going, I'm starting to see people coming out that have literally have not been out since March. And they're coming out. They're being very careful, but they're much more optimistic than they were just a couple of months ago.
Later on in the program, we actually going to have Kerry J. Byrne joining us, and he specializes in hospitalities and businesses, and I believe that a part of our discussion will focus on what happened today. Earlier today, the governor's order officially lifted at 5 a.m. Kerry Byrne, who has been trumpeting the fact that there was no need to close down a lot of these businesses and that there were a lot of needless shutdowns that caused many businesses to go under permanently. Give me your thoughts. You've been able to sustain, but only because you had a plan.
Well, I didn't really have a plan. First of all, you realize that I'm not happy with Kerry Byrne, and you need to explain to him that you and I were probably the impetus behind his venture regarding pizzas, and McGuigan's wasn't even mentioned as one of the best bar pizzas around. So with that being said, I'm sure that you'll send my thoughts to Gary. But seriously, I've been in business for a long time, and I've often said about businesses is that you have to be flexible and you have to be able to roll with the punches and move quickly. You can't be rigid. And I'm going to tell you, that's exactly what we've done throughout this whole pandemic. I mean, from March 16th, standing in front of the TVs with my staff and some customers last March, knowing that we were going to be shut down the next day and watching my employees cry, we lost the busiest day of the year for my restaurant, St. Patrick's Day, and March is historically our busiest month, which we lost. And we've had to change direction so many times in the last 10 months, 11 months, it's crazy. You know, we closed the patio for a few months. We kept the pub open. And then we opened the patio and then opened the pub. It's been, and then recently we were given 20 minutes notice that you had to reduce from 50% to 25%. And then you're told that, well, you can only stay open until 9:30, which frankly was one of the stupidest things that I've ever heard in my entire life. You know, I agree with a lot of the things that Charlie Baker has done, and I disagree with a number of things that he's done because they have hurt an awful lot of businesses. There's no need of closing these restaurants at 9:30. I mean, I understand the 25%. Do I agree with it? No. But if you have an occupancy of 60, which some small places do, and you can only have 15 people in there, what's the sense of opening? You can't afford to open. I mean, we're running at 25%. So we reach capacity often. And I mean, it's fine to be, oh, you're busy. Well, we're busy because, number one, half the tables aren't in the building because I rented a pod and half my furniture is in the pod in the parking lot. And then on that was social distance. So I think that a lot of businesses and a lot of people have been hurt badly, and not because of something that they've done themselves. Again, we have been very flexible. Again, as of today, we can remove the 9:30 curfew. We're not open on Mondays. So we go back to opening to whenever. I think it will help on Friday and Saturday nights. I mean, I have security systems. I look at the cameras, and at 9 o'clock on a Friday or a Saturday night, both restaurants are full. Well, at 25%. And then you look at 10 o'clock and they're closed.
Right.
Well, where did all those people go? They all went to someone's house, which is going to spread the virus more than if they were in a controlled setting. I mean, I that I've become like the COVID Nazi. You don't come in the restaurant without a mask. The employees don't take it down for a second. I have a 6'1" by 3" that I go around and measure the distance between tables. We have been very fortunate. That's a controlled setting. People aren't getting up from the table and going to the bathroom without their mask. It's just not happening.
Yeah.
But where are they going when they leave at 9:30? They're going to their buddy's house. And I have heard so many instances where young people, kids, or stupid adults that don't want to wear masks are getting COVID. I'm not saying it's because restaurants are closing at 9:30, but I'm going to tell you, I think it's better if they stay open for a number of reasons.
You feel that there's a favoritism when it comes to chain restaurants compared to the smaller mom-pop restaurants, that maybe some of these things that were put in place didn't have the drastic effect or didn't have a fatal effect on a big chain compared to somebody who has just that one single restaurant or two restaurants?
Well, you know, the guy that has one or two restaurants certainly doesn't have the financial backing of a major chain. But a lot of major chains have gone bankrupt because people just weren't going out. And I see it. I talked to a couple the other night who used to come in often. They had not gone out to a restaurant since March. And lo and behold, they've done everything they possibly can to avoid getting COVID, and they got COVID at Christmas. Where did they get it? From their son-in-law that came into the house. So they had it. They got better. Guess what? They're now they're going out. Right. Like, what the hell? We might as well go out. It's just people just aren't careful enough. But thank goodness that we're able to at least pick up a few more hours a week. And I believe that it's going to help a lot of restaurants. We really need to get beyond this 25%. And I'm not looking for, you know, a mass amount of people in my restaurants, but look at these restaurants in the North End. How many people do they seat to begin with? You know, 30? Yeah. I mean, but they can't make ends meet, so they're closing. I talked to one of my purveyors a week or so ago, and I said to him, what do you see with businesses going under? And he told me that 15 restaurants a week are closing. You know, not in just this, but around. You know, it's just, it's very hard to sustain.
You're just tuning in. We're speaking with a good friend of the show, also a businessman, hardworking businessman, Richard Rosen, who is our guest as he makes regular appearances. And he also is a proud sponsor. I want to say it's going on almost 10 years that Richard has been a proud sponsor of this radio program. And it's business owners like him that have helped our radio station sustain and maintain, because without our advertisers, who are we really? And this gives you an opportunity, Richard, talking about advertising. You know, we're coming into the new year, looking at 2021. You're not a guy who just says, all right, I got a menu, I'm going to stay with it for the next 10 years. Your guy's always doing different things. I'm going to take lobster roll off and I'm going to add mac and cheese. Or you know what? Let's create a shepherd's pie pizza and let's see what the masses say. You're always tinkering. What can we expect in the coming days and weeks and months that you'll be experimenting with or that you might be adding to your menu?
So we changed the menu at the patio when we reopened. You know, we had been open less than a year when we had to close. So it gave me time to look at some of the things that we wanted to change and get, you know, maybe substitute. So we've made some changes at the patio. You know, I know how much you loved coming to the patio for brunch.
Absolutely.
We were just getting ready to reopen for brunch when it was the 25% went into effect. So I said, you know what, let's just not do it right now. You know, we've had to change our hours to adapt. Like we were talking about being able to roll. I mean, we're not open for lunch during the week at either place. We're closed on Mondays at both places. So we've changed. With respect to the menu, I can't sit here right now and tell you exactly what changes we're going to make to the menu. Right now, it's just a matter of survival day after day. And, you know, my poor daughter, who has really gone through hell with this.
Danielle,
with having to, you know, she has a staff of 70 people at both places that we have to deal with every time we change the hours of the day. So it's been really hard. But you know what? We're doing okay. Let me just say that it's a good thing I'm in the real estate business, because I'd probably shoot myself if I wasn't, because the real estate business is booming. You know, my development business is booming. It helped because you can't make any money in a restaurant. That's why I feel so bad for some of these small places. I honestly don't know how they do it.
Why do you think real estate is doing, and this isn't the first time that I've heard this, but I've heard from various real estate folks and developers that this has been probably the best that it's been in years. It's phenomenal.
Well, there's a number of reasons to it, but mostly it's the interest rates are so low. I mean, young people, that there's a lot of pent-up demand from over the years. There's no product on the market. I mean, for instance, Whitman historically would have 55 houses on the market at any one time. And I think today I looked and there was four.
Wow.
You know, I have two condos. I have one condo left at my new condo project on Route 18, and I've only been doing that for a year. I actually have people living there. Got a couple of other subdivisions that they're selling like crazy because there is no product out there. So there's a pent-up demand, and it's the interest rates. I mean, that is really driving the market. And I mean, when in our lifetime, when could you have gotten a mortgage for less than 3%? I mean, you can't do it. So I mean, you're saving an awful lot of money. But you know, it's good. It's certainly taken the pressure off of me with the restaurants.
We have a few more minutes left with you, Richard. Something that you had shared with me during the break before coming in, you said that there's a return of a favorite thing that happens at your restaurant, Singo. What exactly? Explain, what is Singo?
So when Danielle suggested to me a couple of years ago that we start Singo, I went, no way. I didn't even like the sound of it. Because I didn't know what it was. It's very popular and it's really very cool. So guy has this great sound system that he wheels in, and it's one guy, nobody's singing, and he passes out cards like bingo cards, hence Singo. So he gives you this card with, I don't know how many, five across and five down, and it's like a whole bingo card with the titles of songs. So one card might be the Beatles, or one might be Elvis, or one might be the 70s or the 80s. So they're all different. And he comes in and he sets up. He passes out cards to everybody in the place. And he'll play like 30 seconds or 45 seconds of a song. And it's really good music and it's entertaining. And you check off your little thing. And we give out prizes. We give out pizza. So it lasts about 2 hours. We do it on Wednesday nights. You know, we just brought it back. And then when they went to 25%, we stopped for a couple of weeks and we just brought it back again. And, you know, we have our 25% capacity on Wednesday nights because people don't want to leave. So it's pretty cool. The next thing I'm looking at, you know, you asked me what we're going to do new. I'm trying to figure out if we can get trivia back because we were doing trivia on Tuesday nights. We're actually doing $2 Taco Trivia Tuesdays. So we're reaching out. We just had this discussion the other day about reaching out to the company and seeing if they have someone. Again, it's not someone singing. It's not someone that's walking around. He's not in anybody's face. He's over in the corner. He's asking questions, and you fill out a paper, and you give it back to him. So we're going to try to bring that back. You know what? People are dying to go out. People are dying for entertainment.
Yeah.
People are dying just, you know, and you've been in the restaurants. I have plexiglass that runs the entire length of both bars. I built the little divider so you can come in and have little cubicles. So, I mean, people feel safe coming in the restaurant, especially, you know, people are dying to go out.
Yeah.
And when you do that extra little bit, it pays off. I know some restaurants that do nothing and they're not obeying by the 25%. Well, that's fine. We are, you know, that's because I'm in it for the long haul. You know, we're going to be here for a long time.
Well, again, you're one of the most innovative restaurant owners that I know. And your daughter, Danielle, and Kathy are quite, you know, they're part of the Rosen team that makes it all happen and pulls it all together. So continued success. As we have like a minute or two left in the segment, anything you want to say in closing, any information you want to give the folks, websites or anything, if they want to check out the menu before heading on over?
So, you know, we do daily specials. Again, we had a reservation system, but we took it down with the 25%. First come, first serve. We'd like people to come in and be generous to the wait staff, which most people have been extremely generous to the wait staff. Again, you know, we cut down from a couple waitresses to a single waitress on some nights. But the websites are the McGuigan's Pub, and then the patio at McGuigan's, and they can go online and they can see our menus as well as the daily specials. And, you know, we encourage people to come out. It's safe. Thank goodness we've been very fortunate. You know, we take every employee's temperature when they walk in the door. We tell people, if you don't feel good, don't come into work. So, you know, I have found nowadays you don't get a cold. you have a cold, you're going to go get tested for COVID. And it's a fact because right. that's, you know, if you think, oh, no, I have a cold. Well, I don't know if you have a cold, so go get tested.
Right.
And, you know, and that's how it rolls right now. And that's how you have to do it. So it's been an experience. And I'll tell you one that I hope I never see again in my lifetime and one that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime.
Yeah, I think it only happens every 100 years. It's like the Spanish flu. Richard, we want to thank you so much for joining us, and we thank you very much for being one of our premier sponsors and your support. It means an awful lot.
Well, you do a great job, Kevin. You do a great job for the area, and I'm proud to be one of your sponsors. I wish you hadn't reminded me that it's been 10 years, but I'm proud to be part of your team. And, yes, I am going to take that seat some night and host the show.
Let's not forget, I mean, was happening during the 10-year anniversary of McGuigan's too, right?
11th.
11th, that's right. I keep forgetting.
Isn't that crazy? We've been there 11 years. We had no New Year's Eve party. We got nothing.
There he is, Richard Rosen, our guest. That wraps up our number one of Monday Night Talk. We will take a brief break, and when we come back, our number two, and we kick it off with Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan. In just a few moments, you're listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
WATD-FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. The South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
As a dentist, I know what my patients are saying during times when they really can't speak.
Mm-hmm.
She says her gums are irritated.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you can do? Absolutely. You can try New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Yep, New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. It detoxifies below the gum line to restore your gums back to health in just 7 days. Exactly. Healthy gums, healthy mouth.
New Crest Advanced Gum Restore. Healthy, beautiful smiles for life.
The success of Janet's meal prep business is keeping her from keeping up with customer appetites.
Paleo Prep Meals, this is Janet. Yep, you just reheat. But we actually have a wait list currently. Oh, can you hold on one sec?
She needs to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Patricia Seuss from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass in Brockton. Our small nonprofit animal shelter has served Plymouth, Norfolk, and Bristol counties over the past 11 years. Our mission is to operate as an open admission animal care and adoption facility with focus on prevention of cruelty to animals, education, and outreach. Please go to our website, apcsm.org. Thank you, and please continue to support nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We kick off our number two with the co-host of Monday Night Talk. He is, of course, the 50th mayor of the City of Champions. I believe he also is still celebrating his 50th birthday at the same time. He is Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, who is my guest. We have a bunch of things to talk to later this hour, talking about Boston College alums. We have Kerry J. Byrne. He will be in the house. We will talk with Kerry about the governor's recent rollback and how businesses have been affected, as well as South Shore Bar Pizza. You don't want to miss it. But right now, we say hello to Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan.
Mayor, how are you?
Hey, Kevin, how are you tonight?
Doing pretty good, my co-host.
Unofficial co-host, right? Unofficial. No, I just want to thank you for having me on again. I always love coming on. It's really, you have so many great dedicated listeners every Monday night. And, you know, and Kerry, I'm interested to hear what Kerry has to say. I've known him since BC days, and he really is so dedicated to his craft. But, you know, it's a challenging time here in the City of Champions and in the Commonwealth and the nation with COVID, Kevin. And, you know, we have a lot to talk about tonight, so let's get at it.
Yeah, I think the first thing we should do, the first order of business, is to talk about a COVID update, how the pandemic, how the virus has been affecting the city. Any updates that you want to share as far as positive tests, and I hate to say it because it sounds so grim, but any folks who were not successful in fending off COVID.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this morning, you know, Monday morning, I had a conversation again with Dr. Rick Herman, who's my medical consultant, and Eno Montesur, my leader of Board of Health. He's the director of Board of Health, and Steve Hook from Brockton Emergency Management, BEMA. And, you know, we always have a 10:45 call every morning. So, you know, in the city of Brockton, we've been decimated by this deadly virus, over 360 loss of residents' lives. You know, over 10,500 total cases now, Kevin, here in the city since the state calculated, and over 2,500 current active cases of residents that have positive cases of coronavirus. So it's all hands on deck. You know, 1 o'clock today, I had a call with Good Samaritan Medical Center and Brockton Hospital Signature and the VA Hospital and Neighborhood Health Center. We do that every Monday and Friday. And, you know, they're at, you know, not max capacity, but they're at a census right now with inpatients that they haven't really seen since last May. So there are, you know, six sick people in the ICU. So unfortunately, we saw this at Thanksgiving, the spike, the surge. We are realizing now with Hanukkah and Christmas and Kwanzaa, you know, we're in another spike right now. So we hope it plateaus. We have a shared vision right now. It's all hands on deck to try to minimize and mitigate. Those are the most recent numbers. We're in a red classification. It's just on a call with a regional task force that I set up recently, which is all neighboring communities to Brockton, all the towns that touch Brockton, plus Bridgewater and Randolph. And Kevin, you know, they're in red classifications as well. So, you know, we have light at the end of the tunnel, the proverbial tunnel where there is a vaccine. We're just not there yet. So it's safety precautions, what the doctors tell us to do, wear the mask, social distance, wash your hands. And, you know, I'm just going to continue to reiterate how important it is to adhere to those medical protocols.
Governor, late last week, mentioned the fact that because there was things were trending in the right direction for the Commonwealth, for the number of positive tests and folks who are hospitalized, we're seeing a downward trend. We've seen a downward trend over the past successive 2 days. And because of that, he's decided to roll back a curfew that was instituted in November for fear of spikes, like you just said. And I believe that took effect this morning around 5 a.m. that as far as curfews for restaurants and stay-at-home orders, those have been lifted. How important is that for local businesses in your community?
Yeah, no, it's extremely important. So, you know, they can stay open past 9:30 p.m. now. A lot of the businesses, I mean, they're just trying to eke out a living right now. They're bootstraps. They're just trying to get it done. We've lost some businesses here in Brockton, unfortunately, and statistically, some of them will never come back. So, you know, providing business assistance and guidance and financial resources is something we're doing, using community development block grant money and leveraging our partners with the feds and the states. But, you know, one thing I did several weeks ago is I and some other mayors in the Commonwealth, you know, we closed gyms. And, you know, I did that out of abundance of caution. And I did it for 3 weeks. I didn't extend that order. You know, we were trying to say, stay at home. You know, working out's great. I love to work out, but please stay at home. And so I did it for 3 weeks. And, you know, I don't know what impact it had other than to reiterate again how we need to control our own narrative. But I didn't extend that out, and other mayors did. And with the governor, you know, I had a curfew in effect, two different curfews, executive orders. And so with this morning, the executive order from the governor coming into effect, I also had mine come into effect where we rescinded the curfew 11 p.m. So again, I do think it's going to give some businesses, some restaurants, the ability and waiters and waitresses and bartenders some ability to make some money, long overdue. But again, just with the caveat that, again, please be safe. And if you are going to visit, and I strongly urge people to visit local establishments, and Kerry will be saying the same tonight, and I'll listen to that. But, you know, at Christmas time, what I did was I went and I bought a lot of gift cards and gave those out, you know, that will be utilized to keep businesses going. But it's important, Kevin. And again, you know, the vaccine is something that we rolled out 2 weeks ago in Brockton with the first phase. That's our frontline staff, you know, that's our firefighters and our police and some other frontline staff. And we use Brockton High School, which is one of the largest public high schools east of the Mississippi. That is our plan. That is going to be our local distribution site. That's the key site. And going forward later this week, we'll be rolling out some additional vaccines, utilizing Brockton High again. Red Cafeteria is where we did it. Red IRC, the library, is the observation point. Once you get the shot, you're going to be observed for 20 minutes. So, you know, in April, I suspect it's going to be April when we roll it out citywide. We're going to utilize all four cafeterias, all four libraries at Brockton High. But we also have a lot of seniors and elders here in Brockton, Kevin, that are mobile, that can't get there. So working right now with our partners at the hospitals and specifically Neighborhood Health Center to figure out a plan to get to our Brockton Housing Authority residents. You know, we have a lot of high rises and low rises in Brockton as well. So, you know, I applaud everybody that is continuing to keep their business afloat. Again, my role as mayor is to make sure we have a safe community. And it's been a daunting task, but through the partnership and collaboration of many, many people, people that are putting their lives on the line to save lives, we're getting there, and we're not there yet, but I do expect more medicine to come to Brockton in the near future.
To echo what you said, Mayor, in regards to we are not there yet, and not to put the cart before the horse, but was there a sense of relief when you saw your first responders in the city getting that shot and knowing that we are making progress towards that light at the end of the tunnel getting brighter and brighter and growing closer and closer?
Yeah, it was a special day. And again, I want to thank everybody that it's a personal decision. There are some people saying to me, nope, I'm not going to get that shot. It's untested. I would argue that it's been tested by 80,000 clinicians, right? 40,000 got the placebo, 40,000 got the actual vaccine. And so in my humble opinion, when I'm eligible to get the shot, I'm going to roll up my sleeve proudly and take that shot. But it really was a great day. We were given 600 doses. We administered 530. And again, it was all hands on deck. So we did it at Brockton High, and we needed the help from the three health nurses. We needed help from the school nurses, other clinicians, and, you know, staging areas and registration areas and Brewster Ambulance. So, you know, we needed to have EpiPens there and Benadryl there and AEDs. God forbid there was a cardiac incident. There were not. There were three minor incidents. You know, people had some tingling and numbness. And again, we had clinicians there that really addressed it. And it was a great day. You know, we ran it out in a way that was professional, and the rollout was exceptional. And I look forward to many more of these, Kevin, because Brockton has such really catastrophic sickness and death. You know, you're talking over 360 residents perish because of this. So with the vaccine, you know, there's an education component. I'm working with many of our local pastors and our doctor, again, Rick Herman. We're a beautiful, diverse community, and we need to educate and inform. And it's like a marketing campaign. It really is. So, again, I was excited that day, and I'll be excited as we continue to move forward. We need that. We need the excitement. There's been too much sadness over the year.
Now, not to transition away from COVID, but kind of stay in the same conversation last week in regards to maybe, possibly, exploring another method of learning in the city, maybe heading towards a hybrid model in the middle of next month. I know that there's going to be a certain group of students, but the wheels are in motion for that, hopefully, correct?
Yeah, I mean, last week, last Tuesday night, we had about a 2.5-hour school committee subcommittee. It's all seven members plus myself as the chairman and the superintendent, Mike Thomas. And we got just a great local elected officials, school committee, city councilors. I mean, really care about the community and do it the right way. So we looked at the metrics. Dr. Herman presented the data and the statistics and most recent information. And so we took a vote. Now, you know, the school vacation, February vacation, holiday break is the week of the 15th. So, you know, our goal right now is to get our special interest and special needs students in a classroom. Get them in. It's conducive. We need to have an environment that really helps them. We're hearing that from the teachers. We're hearing that from the parents and guardians, hearing it from some of the students. So we had took a vote on Tuesday, February 23rd. The SPED students will be back if they choose to. It's going to be not mandatory. It's a choose, but the hybrid will be optional. And if not, you can continue to be remote. But we're going to phase in. There's 340 special ed, special needs students at Brockton Public Schools. And, you know, I look forward to that day. And I know the kids do, the boys and girls, and the staff and teachers as well. But biggest thing is it has to be a safe environment. So that's a firm date right now. And, you know, the metrics are going to float in a way that is going to be beneficial. And again, make sure that we continue the efforts of disinfecting and social distancing and mask wearing. So, you know, over time, we're going to see our kindergartens and we're going to see our sixth graders and our ninth graders, because those three age groups are going to be new to the schools, right? You know, middle school and high school and kindergarten, but we're not there yet. But as a dad of three young kids that are doing remote right now, it's just not normal. It's not. It's frustrating. It's you know, you're on TV all day on the Zoom. And it's not normal for the teachers as well. So I'm thankful that we have really caring professional people that are the staff and the teachers, really dedicated boys and girls students in Brockton Public Schools. And also a thank you to the parents and the grandparents and the guardians and loved ones that do it every day. It's just not normal, but you know, we're seeing some benefit, Kevin, and I'm glad you asked the question because it's important.
It is interesting. And knowing that, if I'm correct, Brockton has 28 schools, or is that number off?
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
And just thinking, you know, because I know there were a lot of folks who in various communities would question, why does my community, why do our elected leaders want to go with a remote model? You know, why do they want to go full remote, and why not have a hybrid model or try to return in, you know, full forward fashion? I think what a lot of folks don't realize is what the cost and what the expenditure is in order to make sure that each one of those schools, think of what it is. I mean, you've got to have the chemicals, you'd have the staff, where you have to maintain and clean and cleanse those buildings and those classrooms so many times a day. And I see communities that are in the hybrid model, and it's like a roller coaster where, oh, we had six students that, you know, that tested positive. We had four students in this school, and where this Brockton decided to go full remote, you don't need to be on the yo-yo plan.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of things. I mean, as a city councilor at large for 14 years, I had professed this philosophy, and I believe it. There's no price tag on health and safety. Yeah. So, you know, we're fortunate under the CARES Act, the money that we're spending as a school district and as a city, at least a proportion, will get reimbursed under the federal CARES Act, which is great. And our partners in Plymouth County have been wonderful to work with, and Treasurer O'Brien and former Chair Dan Pallotta and Greg Hanley, now Jared Valenzuela and Sandy Wright as well. Just really caring public servants. But I agree with you. I mean, it's you're talking about Brockton High. You have over 4,000 kids there, never mind the staff and the, yeah, and the lunch helpers and custodians. And so there's a lot of people. It's a mini city. So one thing that myself and the seven elected school committee members share is, you know, we need it to be a safe environment. And Mike Thomas, superintendent of schools, and I, we're products of the Brockton Public Schools. You know, we went to high school together. And so Mike and I talk every single day, every single day. I don't know if other mayors and other superintendents did that, but Mike and I do. And I think it's important to do that. So, you know, we're going through a lot right now as a school district, but also, you know, we also have a charter school, New Heights Charter, and Omari Walker and I talk. And you know, we have Cardinal Spellman High School and Trinity Catholic Academy and a couple other private schools in Brockton. So, you know, I've seen some schools that have opened, you know, full in person and had to peel it back and go hybrid and then peel it back and go remote. So we haven't done that. We've been 100% remote, but we're starting to see some real benefits as we move forward. And I look forward to it as a dad and as the mayor.
You're just tuning in. We are speaking with Brockton Mayor, co-host of Monday Night Talk, Robert Sullivan, is joining us as we do our we try to check in every couple of weeks to make sure that we give him a couple of, get his turns behind the mic as the co-host, but also to talk about the beloved city that he grew up in and how they are dealing with this terrible virus, this pandemic, global pandemic. You got a big event coming up later this week. I always see this. I've always enjoyed, regardless who served in the capacity as the chief executive of the city of Brockton, I always marveled at the craft of writing a state of the city address. And not that I'm asking you to give any ingredients or details of the secret sauce, but what is going through your mind as you're preparing to speak to your citizens in Brockton?
Yeah, I mean, I think back when I was a kid and I went to listen to Mayor Winfow or Mayor Jack Unitz's, and then when I got elected and was able to sit in the council chamber and listen to Mayor Jim Harrington and then Mayor Balzotti, and then when Mayor Carpenter came in, Bill did a little different. He went to the War Memorial and we were all there listening. And I'm excited. I really am excited to give my inaugural State of the City. It's a little disappointing because you want to be able to do it in a venue in front of the constituents, the people that you serve. And I serve proudly. It's an honor and privilege to be the mayor of the city of Brockton. I don't take that granted at all. It's going to be on Zoom, and it's going to be filmed, and it's going to be on local Brockton Community Access, and we'll have it, on our city Facebook. But it's about talking to the residents, talking to the business owners, the people that I serve and I serve proudly, and talking to my fellow elected officials from the school committee to the city council to the three state reps and the state senator. I mean, we're all in this together. And I don't care what party affiliation you are. In Brockton, when you run locally, it's a nonpartisan election. So, I'm going to speak from the heart. I do that. I typically, for good or for bad, talk off the cuff. But I am going to have some talking points that are extremely valuable. I'm going to be very thankful for all the collaboration and support that I've received from so many people, from my health providers to our workers to everybody. So it's something, Kevin, I'm really looking forward to. I think back to as a boy growing up in Brockton, really what a wonderful community it was. And none of us in the year 2020 and now 2021 would expect that we would have a pandemic, but we do. We have been impacted forever. We have been pained. But as the leader, as the mayor of the city of Brockton, I'm going to be able to express my thoughts and my thanks as we move forward together. That's the key word, working together for a better community.
It's, it disappoints me that our conversations over the past year have had to focus on what's going on in regards to the pandemic. But I'm glad that it's been also an outlet. So it's kind of a double-edged sword here. But things are still going on despite Corona, the coronavirus, COVID, whatever you want to call it. It's business as usual. And you and I talking off air prior to, your segment, one of the things you mentioned is that you're still hearing from developers. There are people who still, there are organizations, there are businesses, there are developers, planners who want to come to the city and who want to call Brockton home and who want to do business in Brockton. How does that feel as mayor?
Well, I think people understand. It feels great as mayor. It feels great as a lifelong Brocktonian, and myself and my wife both grew up here. And it is. It feels great. I also think that, and I won't take credit for it, but I had a part in it. I decided not to put a halt to construction when COVID came to Brockton. Other municipalities did. I said, no, let's do it in a safe way. And it's paid off. It really has. It's paid off dividends. And, in terms of investment and people looking for a really good return on their investment, Brockton is ripe. It really is. And I say it, and I say this a lot, but if Brockton was a stock, we should all buy it because the upside's great. We're located not too far from South Station. We have three commuter stops. Our price point, our rent is so much more reasonable to other municipalities. You could talk about Quincy, and you can mention that to Kerry. Quincy, and Braintree, and Southie, and Dorchester, and Charlestown. Brockton, young professionals are coming here. What I've seen during my time as mayor, when I got sworn in last January 6th of 2020, is to continue the relationships that I've fostered over the years. So I've reached out to former Lieutenant Governor and now CEO of the chamber up in Worcester, Tim Murray. And Tim's been able to send some people to Brockton to look, and some of them are really interested in investing. And, you know, we have people from New Bedford, and we're having people from, you know, New York City that are acquiring property and really putting some strong investment, not just in the core of the city, but if you drive downtown Brockton, it's not what you expect. I mean, there's cranes and there's construction and there's noise and there's foot traffic and mask wearing, of course. But, I will tell you that the Brockton of today is going to be a lot different next year and 5 years and 10 years because people are investing, people are moving here. And now we also have to provide the amenities. So we're starting to see some commercial interest as well. And the other thing, Kevin, and I don't know if a lot of people know this, but Hollywood is interested. So we have the AMC film series. It's a TV series that's been filming in Brockton. We have Netflix with some major motion picture people coming just in a few weeks. You know, Leonardo DiCaprio, Meryl Streep, Jennifer Lawrence, and, you know, just got contacted by another major Hollywood studio the other day coming to Brockton as well. So that's good for our local economy. It's good for the city coffers because, they're paying to rent some space. It's good for PR, but it's really good for our businesses. You know, it really is. So there's a lot going on right now, win-win situation, and I welcome it. I keep saying, you know, anybody that calls her, I call them back. Let's chat, and let me be the biggest cheerleader for the city of Brockton because it is a wonderful community.
It's interesting you mentioned Hollywood because I don't know if you know this. There's actually a series called Wayne. Have you ever heard of it?
Yes I have. Yes, I have.
Although when I saw what the Brockton Police Station looked like on that show, Wayne, it looks nothing like the police station that I've been accustomed to driving by and seeing over the years. But it's interesting that they use Brockton as a backdrop for the particular show itself.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? You talk about police stations. So thanks to the city council, and there's 11 members, and I consider all of them friends. I put forward a bond request. It's a $98 million bond authorization, and they approved it to build a new public safety facility. When I stood on the podium and I took my oath, I stood up there and gave a speech, and one of the things I said is, we need to provide a sleek, modern facility for police and fire. And it was approved, and we're moving forward. And I got a call just the other day from one of the former mayors who said, I couldn't get that done. I don't know how you did it, Bob, but that's what Brockton needs. And it really is a win-win. We have weekly meetings with the architects and the consultants and city employees and school employees, and it's all hands on deck. But I'll tell you right now, there's some really, really good things happening in Brockton, and we have to continue that train moving down that track.
When do you make an announcement as to where the new hub of police and fire? Because I believe it will be kind of a central hub for police, fire, and maybe teaming up with the DA, stuff like that.
So what we're doing actually, it's going to have four different departments. It's going to have police and fire. It's going to have our IT, which right now is based at Brockton High School. They're going to move down there. And also our BEMA, Brockton Emergency Management, which is key right now in the vaccine distribution. They're over at the War Memorial. We're going to have four different departments there. It's in Ward 2, I'll tell you that, if you're familiar with Brockton. I don't want to disclose the location. But listen, at the end of the day, I am very, very thankful that my fellow elected officials supported that. Again, if I can spend under that, I definitely will. It's cost containment measures, but we want to do it the right way. So, you know, we have the chiefs, both police and fire. We have IT director Bill Santos, Steve Hook from BEMA. We have a lot of deputy chiefs involved as well, and a lot of police and other people helping us on this. So it's going to be really a game changer. Because at the end of the day, if you think about it, right now the station on Pleasant Street was wired. This is a fact. This isn't a Sullivanism. This is a fact. Thomas Edison wired that fire station. So you think about that. So we need to make sure that the men and women that proudly serve and bravely serve our community have the best of the best. And this is heading in the right direction to achieve that goal.
Mayor, we got like 2 or 3 minutes left, and I reserved that for you to kind of give your closing thoughts as we again speaking with the Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, who has been my guest and is our on again off again co-host for this program. We'll get him in studio one of these days real soon after he gets his two shots. What would you like to say in closing about this segment?
Well, one thing I do is I want to wish and thank Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, who has been a true leader He has offered me great support as a new mayor. He's become a friend. And, of course, he's going now to take his skill set down to lead the Labor Department in the Biden administration. And Marty's just a normal guy from Dorchester, and I wish him well. Had a great conversation with him recently with other mayors, and he's going to be really an all-star down there. And he's not going to forget the cities and the Commonwealth. So, again, I applaud him. I think it was a wonderful selection by President Biden. And I also just want to thank everybody in Plymouth County. Of course, Brockton's the only city in the county. We have wonderful towns in the county, and what's good for Brockton is good for the towns and vice versa. And that's my mantra, and I believe that. So I want to thank you, Kevin, because, you know, your dedication to your craft and getting the message out is extremely helpful every Monday for your listeners. And I'm just honored that you want to have a guy from Brockton get on and talk ragtime. But I do look forward to many, many, many more Monday night talks with you. And again, let's talk to Kerry and get him to get some more Bob Pizza in the City of Champions.
We might have to, you know what we might have to do, Mayor, and depending on what you have for time, and I gotta be real quick with this. The mayor might want to start his own podcast one of these times. That's the thing these days.
Well, it is, and you know, I would never say never. I want to give a shout out to Carol Thomas, my old drama teacher at Brockton High. You know, she always said, you know, you don't have the looks on the stage, but you get the voice. So I'd be happy to do anything that literally gets information out to the residents of the county and the Commonwealth. Be happy to do that.
Right. There he is. Brockton Mayor Robert Sullivan, our guest, our co-host for this radio program. We're going to step aside and we can come back in a few moments. Kerry J. Byrd from KJB Tending Hospitalities. We'll be in the house. We'll chat with him in just a few moments. You are tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
Liberty Mutual Insurance Company presents Cable. And Doug.
Okay, class, let's bump it up tonight.
Come on, Limu, keep peddling. We got to build our endurance to let more people know that Liberty Mutual customizes your car insurance, so you only pay for what you need.
Pick up the pace, bird legs.
Hey, don't talk to Limu like that.
I'm not. I'm talking to you.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Get a customized quote at libertymutual.com.
The Rocket Mortgage Super Bowl Square Sweepstakes is back. Every time the score changes, someone wins $50,000. Plus, two grand prize winners will win $500,000 they could use toward their dream home. See rules and enter for free at rocketmortgagesquares.com. Rocket Mortgage, official mortgage sponsor of Super Bowl 55.
No purchase necessary. Legal residents of the 50 U.S. and D.C. of age of majority. Ends February 4th. Licensed in all 50 states and MLS number 3030. The NFL is not sponsor promotion in any way.
Go ahead, indulge yourself. Every Wednesday night, tune in to Talk with Francesca and join me for provocative conversation, intriguing stories, and inspiration. So sit back and relax, or be stimulated, or both. Because being connected feels good. It's contagious, and I personally want to spread it around.
Don't miss Talk with Francesca, Wednesday nights at 9 on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Hey, welcome back to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. You know, I've used the analogy more than once that the way I see this radio program, since I took the radio program over somewhere close to 10 years ago from the great Bob Hedlund, I see this radio program, the way I kind of segment it, as a meal. When you go to a restaurant, you know, maybe you might have a couple of appetizers, you have a drink, and then you have your entree. And so my first hour usually is the drink and our appetizer, but we really get into the meat of our conversation. The entree is 7 o'clock, and then we have our dessert portion at 7:30. And not that I would want to equate my final guest of the evening as a dessert of any kind, because he's so much more. And he's a great friend, and he's been on this radio program so many times. But the great Kerry J. Byrd joins us from KJB Tending Hospitalities, kerryburn.com, if you want to find out more. Kerry, how are you, friend?
Kevin, always a pleasure. One of the highlights of my month, my year, is to be on the air with you and share our thoughts with your listeners. It's always a good segment.
You know, you are able to talk in so many different on so many different topics, so many different levels. We could talk politics and the swearing in of a new president. We could talk sports. We could talk football because that's right in your wheelhouse. But I also know that, you know, being a guy, if you were in a Major League Baseball lineup, you would be the guy that I would stick in the cleanup spot because I know that you'd be able to swing and hit it over the fence every time. And I feel that that swing would be talking food because you are a world traveler and you have had eats from all over the place and you've helped. I know you currently work, you assist the city of Quincy in their regards to kind of bolster their restaurants and businesses to do much better. I also know that you've kind of expanded your reach. Now you're more so, now you're in, we see you in New York City and doing stuff. So I want to get your take on the latest information and news regarding the rollback here in Massachusetts, instituted this morning around 5 a.m., where there's no more curfew, and that businesses can stay open later than 9:30. You don't have to worry about seating someone at 9 o'clock and ushering them out by 9:30, per se. Give me your thoughts, because you have been very allowed voice when it comes to how businesses have been affected by this pandemic.
Well, listen, first of all, I work with many, many small businesses, local restaurants, some of the, you know, premier restaurants in Massachusetts. We're all excited that this rollback is, you know, that, you know, as of today, you know, they don't have to shut early. You know, obviously some more, I think in 2 weeks, the restrictions on numbers inside will be over. And this is all welcome news. With that said, there is a lot of animosity among small business owners, restaurateurs in particular, who have borne the brunt of this shutdown to the point it's destroyed people's lives. And I don't mean that, I don't mean that as kind of a throwaway line. No, people's lives have been destroyed. Their livelihoods, their businesses, their marriages, their families, all of this, because of these shutdowns, have caused widespread damage, and we don't know if it's helped anybody either. So while we welcome the fact that this rollback is coming, there's a lot of simmering animosity because look at these restaurants. Keep in mind, Kevin, these small businesses that have basically, you know, the percentage, it's going to be well over 50% if it's not already that went under. These people are also dealing with COVID. You know, their parents are elderly. They're worried about them. Their kids aren't in school. They may have autoimmune deficiencies themselves. They're dealing with all the potential impact of COVID like everybody else. And they have the boot of the government on their neck, you know, strangling the life out of them. And it's been devastating. Meanwhile, they walk down the street, drive down the street, and there's a big box store with the parking lot packed and thousands of people inside, literally thousands of people inside. And the small businessman's, you know, getting hammered and all this. It's been a tragedy within a tragedy. And the timing of this, the fact that this announcement was made 24 hours after the inauguration, reeks of political shenanigans. And I know almost all the small business owners, not just restaurateurs, but especially restaurateurs, small business I talk to, are extremely suspicious of the timing and feel they were pawns in a political game. And when you remember that lives were destroyed, livelihoods were destroyed, you know, people committed suicide. I took phone calls all year long from restaurateurs on the brink of suicide. I'm not saying they were just upset. I'm talking, you know, they needed help. We had to talk them off the ledge because their livelihoods were being destroyed. They were worried about their kids' education. Would they have a roof over their head? Would they be able to feed their family? They feel like they were pawns in a political game. And I never thought I'd say that here in the United States of America, but that's how a lot of them feel, Kevin.
Not to play Monday morning quarterback here, not to try to rewrite the annals of history. What could have been done differently? What could have been, if we play, again, Monday morning quarterback here, what would have been the best approach to take?
There's something called individual choice and individual decisions, Kevin. Keep in mind, let's focus on restaurants. Restaurants are the most heavily regulated quality control businesses in America. They're regulated at the local, state, and federal level. They've been worried about diseases and viruses and foodborne illnesses from day one. Food can kill people. You know, there's foodborne diseases. Restaurants are committed day in and day out to the safety of their guests and their customers. And it's very simple. If you didn't feel safe, you shut down your restaurant and don't open until you feel safe. If you didn't feel it was in the interest of your employees, don't open your restaurant. Conversely, if you don't want to go out and eat, if you didn't feel safe in public, don't go out and eat. Very simple. And let the market decide. And, you know, the reality is small businesses were singled out and took the brunt. When big businesses are open, when Walmart's doing better than ever, when Amazon's doing better than ever, and, you know, the mom and pop is getting eviscerated, right? You know, the foundation of our communities, that's not right. That's not right. People have to make their own decisions about their own health and welfare. What we had now was a healthcare system run by executive fiat. This never happened before in American history, where the government picked and chose winners and losers. And by the way, we have no evidence. There is no scientific evidence of any kind that these shutdowns helped anybody. We hope they did, but there's no evidence of any kind. There is overwhelming evidence that we destroyed people's lives and livelihoods and ruined careers and made people sick and caused a healthcare crisis on top of a healthcare crisis. Overwhelming evidence that what we did was extraordinarily damaging to the health and welfare of our communities, with no evidence, very little evidence, certainly no proof that we helped a single person. And, you know, study after study is coming out now. There was just Newsweek just published an international peer-reviewed study saying, hey, these shutdowns don't look like they worked. I ran the numbers last week. States like Florida and Georgia with, no shutdowns, no mask mandates, half the COVID mortality rate of a state like Massachusetts. So people felt like we were doing the right thing, but we weren't. There's no indication we did the right thing. We know we did terrible, terrible things to our small business owners, unprecedented in American history. And these people have suffered. These people have suffered needlessly. And it could have been all handled by, we all have invested interest in our own health and well-being of ourselves, our friends, our families. And we didn't allow adults to make adult decisions. It was kind of a terrible time in American history from my perspective.
And if you are just tuning in, we're speaking with Kerry J. Byrne, a great friend to the radio program, and someone who is very well versed when it comes to food and what's going on with the industry itself. KJB Pending Hospitalities, KerryByrne.com, BYRNE is the spelling of the last name. We're talking a little bit about the news that we're seeing the rollbacks. For restaurants, so stuff that was instituted when we started seeing numbers climbing, the COVID numbers climbing. It is interesting, Kerry, that the numbers that we're seeing what right now between 4,000 and 5,000 positive cases. We're seeing numbers trending down for folks in the hospital. But if you look back in March, April, and May, mm-hmm. I would almost think that the numbers were not as high as we're seeing them now.
Which raises the curious question of the timing of the rollback. Listen, I welcome the 100% welcome anything that'll let our businesses breathe. But the timing is more than curious, and there's been a lot of hysteria. There's been very little scientific reasoning. There's been a lot of hysterical headlines, and when you listen, nobody. We've all dealt with it. We all have people who suffered from COVID. Many of us have had it. Many of us have lost loved ones. But people die for a whole bunch of different reasons. And when you look at the big picture, there's been really no change in mortality rates across the state or from infectious diseases. Unfortunately, people die. There's the difference between – there's been a vast chasm between the level of hysteria and political mandate and the actual change in the health and welfare based on COVID of our communities. That's just the numbers. That's just the science on it. And what happened is it became, when it's in the headlines, when it's in the media every day, nonstop, death. The one thing I found a low point in the history of American media was a CNN death clock. I call it the death clock, Kevin. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They clicked off the bodies minute by minute. As someone died, they literally, like the old Jerry Lewis Teledon tote board, you know, oh, you know, another dead body, another dead body. That did nothing to help the public health crisis. That did nothing to allay fears. It only stoked hysteria. Oh, and by the way, it disappeared last week. There's no longer a CNN death clock counting the bodies. I found that, as a media person, totally inappropriate, almost inhumane. It didn't help anybody. It just fueled fear and made people upset. And if you look at the number of people who died in context to the number of people who die in a normal year, there really wasn't any difference, Kevin. There wasn't. And but we just focused on a death, 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 death. Nobody wants anyone to die. No one wants their loved ones to suffer or anyone to suffer. But we just focused on it nonstop, and it drove the storyline that was conflicted with the actual data. And with all that said, there's a human story. I mean, I actually wrote about it at kerryburn.com in defense of the industry. These people whose businesses were destroyed, they're battling COVID too. Everything you're worried about, Kevin, they are battling too, on top of having their businesses destroyed. So it's the first time that I know of, and I've done a lot of historical research, that we demanded a certain segment of the population suffer so the rest of us might feel safer. And we don't know if it helped him. We demanded small business owners, you have to suffer. Your livelihood needs to be destroyed because we'll feel better, we'll feel safer, with no evidence, certainly no proof that this in fact helped anybody. It's really sad. It was a sad, sad time. I welcome the fact that it's changing. I want every small business owner to succeed. I want every community to be healthy and well and as healthy as possible. But this didn't help. How we handled it didn't help. And real people suffered while the big box store had record sales. Just remember that. I live in New York City now, as you know, Kevin. There's still no indoor dining in New York City. People are sitting outside 30 degrees out having dinner in a little wood hut on 8th Avenue or whatever street it might be. Meanwhile, I went to Macy's to go Christmas shopping. There were thousands of people in there. I posted the video on social media. Wall-to-wall people inside Macy's. You can't go next door and get a hamburger. Explain that to me.
Do you feel that this will change with the new administration? Do you feel that the Biden-Harris administration will make changes and that there'll be modifications? Or do you feel that it's going to be, it doesn't matter who is taking up residence in the White House?
No, I think it absolutely has. That's, I guess, the point. That's the reason so many business owners are suspicious of the timing. Like, the day after, like, all of a sudden, Massachusetts was healthier the day after the inauguration. You've got to admit, I don't care what side of the political aisle you're on, the timing is suspicious. It's certainly suspicious. All of a sudden, we're lifting restrictions that have been in place for months, been in place in some cases for 10 months, and all of a sudden, 24 hours after the inauguration of a new administration, oh, wait, oh, no, it's okay. Time to go out. Time to get back in business. Time to lift the curfew. It stinks to high heaven, Kevin. Let's face it. It stinks to high heaven. And you really have to have your head in your sand if you don't see a correlation. And business owners, again, real human beings. These are your friends, your family, your neighbors. These are real hardworking local people, the guys who sponsor your Little League team. You know, the guys who donate to the fundraiser at the Elks Lodge, right? The guys who, when you need a gift certificate for the fundraiser because someone's sick, you don't get it from Walmart. You get it from, Joe's Pizza Shop, you know? And these people have suffered inordinately, all while battling the same COVID troubles that the rest of us faced. They just did it, with the government kind of stomping the life out of them. I find it completely unacceptable, personally.
While we're sitting here talking about the dark side of this pandemic, there is a little bit of light. If anything, recently there was an article written in the local Scribe Ledger Enterprise about one of your favorite foods, bar pizza. And I believe that this article gave love to one of your creations. I credit you with the creation of it, being the godfather of it.
No, I'm going to correct you on this in a second, Kevin, but finish your question.
No. Well, I know that you're the one who has heavily promoted it. So maybe it was created the South Shore Bar Pizza Facebook group. I'm not saying giving it its full due.
South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club.
Yes. I'm not sure if you're the one who created it or if you are in cahoots with whoever created it, but it has become highly successful.
Yep.
And it was recognized in that article, as was the fact that Bar Pizza has become quite the thing these days.
Yeah, well, I am the creator of the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club. I call it America's greatest restaurant success story of 2020, of the COVID era, Kevin. Bar Pizza is, you know, a phenomenon in the kind of the pubs and taverns and watering holes south of Boston. We all, if you grew up in this area, you grew up eating Bar Pizza, you know your favorite Bar Pizza spot. These are local mom and pop businesses. We created the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club on the eve of the pandemic. Back in February, when I saw my restaurants I work with starting to lose business, people were afraid to go out. I said, we need to do something to support local mom and pops. What's more South Shore and local than Bar Pizza? The group, I launched it in one day in February. Within 24 hours, it had 2,000 members. It's up around 25,000 members now. It's generating all kinds of press. And while I created the group, Kevin, you, I want to pay tribute to you, are in fact the godfather of the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club. It was born, the genesis of the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club. Again, America's greatest restaurant success story of the COVID era. You are the godfather of that movement, Kevin, and let me explain why. Several years ago, on one of our annual pre-Super Bowl episodes, it was me, it was you, it was Jerry Thornton, and I think one of you, had one of your Bar Pizza buddies in there at the time, and we were talking about Bar Pizza, and I had written about Bar Pizza several times for the Herald. I was still at the Herald at the time. And Jerry Thornton, who's a well-known famous sports writer, a South Shore kid, he didn't know it was a South Shore thing. And you and I and Jerry had a great conversation, and it dawned on me in that moment in your studio on that show in Marshfield, wait a minute, Bar Pizza is our local great culinary phenomenon, our tradition. So from that moment in your studio, I started diving deeper and deeper and deeper into the tradition and history of South Shore Bar Pizza. And the culmination of that is America's greatest restaurant success story. So cheers to you, Kevin, the godfather of the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club movement.
You're all too kind to name me that.
That's a true story, Kevin. I didn't make that up. That's a true story.
No. And I think the person who might have been in the room is a longtime sponsor of the show. It might have been Richie Rosen, who McGuigan's Pub.
McGuigan's Pub in Whitman, right?
That's correct. They do their own. They have their own 10-inch pans, and they have fast become just like the Cape Cod cafes, Town Spas, the Linwood, whoever your favorite is. McGuigan's Pub is right up there. It's, you know, probably one of my top ones, top two.
Well, I'll tell you what, I thought I had written quite a bit about Bar Pizza at the Boston Herald. I thought I knew everything there was to know. It turns out I knew nothing. It turns out this is much more deeply ingrained in South Shore culinary culture and just culture in general than I realized. I thought there were 10 or 12 Bar Pizza joints. Turns out there's like 60 of them.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. Not only that, they're spreading into Boston. The Erie Pub in Dorchester just started serving South Shore Bar Pizza. Mm-hmm. A place in a fancy restaurant in downtown Boston called Troquet. How fancy is that? Oh, I'm going to Troquet this evening. They're serving South Shore Bar Pizza. They just launched it last week.
Sure.
So the Bar Pizza has become a huge phenomenon. And here's an example of how some of these restaurants, first of all, there's 50 or 60 Bar Pizza joints. Not one has gone out of business, Kevin. The most devastating period in American restaurant history, the industry eviscerated over 50% of restaurants around the country out of business. Not one South Shore Bar Pizza joint has gone under because residents in your listenership, people listening to this now, rallied to support these local mom and pop businesses, and in some ways fueled by the club. People went out on tours. People learned about all these other places. There's now Bar Pizza tourism. People traveling every weekend. It's been quite a phenomenon. Some of these places, their pizza sales are up 250% compared to 2019 to 2020. And here's a great example. I know you're a proud Brockton native, Kevin. Bar Pizza, by definition, is made in these little 10-inch pans, these steel pans. There's a place in Brockton that sells them called Bay State Restaurant Products. I believe I have the name right. In a typical year, they would sell 1,000 pans to local restaurants. This past year, they sold 5,000 pizza pans mostly the local people who learned how to make pizza at home. So if you go to the Social Bar Pizza Social Club, in addition to people sharing their favorite locations, people are sharing their tips and secrets on how to make bar pizza at home. We have created a whole new generation of bar pizza enthusiasts. People during the shutdown taught their kids how to make bar pizza. To the point, pizza pan sales at this one wholesaler are up fivefold in the midst of the pandemic. So it's been a great success. Not only that, the owner of Brockton, it's like a 75-year-old Brockton business, Bay State Restaurant Products. The owner is now known on the group as the famous Bobby Owens. He now has a nickname, the famous Bobby Owens. People go in, buy pans, and get selfies with them. Oh, look, I got a pan from Bobby Owens. This group has made a celebrity out of a pizza pan salesman. That's how good it's been.
But what is the real key to these pans? Because it's funny you mentioned that people are doing this, and I know because you actually were a guest on a cable program that I produce called The Pizza Boys, where these two gentlemen go around to different bars and they sample.
That's right, I forgot about that, yeah.
And actually, they went out and bought, you know, the pizza pans and cooked their own pizzas. What do you think as far as is this sustainable? Per se, to people going around and doing this? Are you hoping to make this a thing?
Yeah, well, it's always been a thing. It's deeply ingrained in culture. You know, it began traditionally, bar pizza is traced to the Cape Cod Cafe in Brockton after World War II, and then spread. It was a working man's pizza. It popped up in Brockton, popped up in Quincy. You know, the guys who worked at the shoe factories in Brockton would go get beer and bar pizza after work. The guys who worked at the shipyard the shoe factory is Brockton. The guys who worked at the shipyard in Quincy would go out and get bar pizza and beer after work. You know, that's kind of the origin of it. So it's been deeply ingrained in culture, but now it's being celebrated. So I think we've helped elevate it. And the goal now, and this has just been a passion project. You know, this is not my business. This is purely a passion project right now, Kevin. I want to turn this and make the South Shore a culinary tourism destination. I want people, when they come to Boston, to say, you know what, like, I got to go visit these bar pizza joints. Much like if you go to Vermont and you visit the craft breweries. If you go to Texas, you visit the barbecue joints, right? Name the region. You go to London, you visit the pubs. You go to Munich, you visit the beer halls. You go to, you know, whatever it might be. You go to Paris, you go to the cafes. Much like those places, we want people to come to Boston, come to Massachusetts, and travel the South Shore and discover this amazing world of South Shore bar pizza. So my next step is to kind of work on that with national media, see if we can get them involved. Right now, there's a filmmaker in Las Vegas working on a documentary about bar pizza.
Ooh.
I mentioned the bar pizza place is opening in Boston. The tradition is now spreading outside north of the Neponset River, you know, which has been the Great Wall of bar pizza for generations. There's people starting bar pizza food trucks. There's one called Mike and Lenny's. I'm not sure where they're out of. I don't think they've launched yet. But they came out of this group. They're launching. There's someone else launching a bar pizza truck in Texas, I believe. So this is really becoming a national phenomenon, Kevin. We're gonna push it. We want people to come to Massachusetts and visit Brockton, visit Quincy, visit Randolph, visit Whitman. By the way, I think 1 in 8 residents of the town of Whitman are members of the South Shore Bar Pizza Social Club.
Fantastic.
Look at the data. It's unbelievable.
Well, you have a couple of you again. I mentioned McGuigan's Pub, which is one of the primary spots in Whitman. So I can see it definitely. As you're just tuning in, we are again speaking with Kerry J. Byrne with a KJB Trending Hospitalities. I ask you, go to the website Kerry Byrne BYRNE.com and check out some of the stuff that he's written. He does a regular blog. Anything you want to drop on the folks while we have 2 or 3 minutes left here that they should search for on your website?
Yeah, well, no, I'll tell you what, though, if I could, you know, one of the things I've been lucky to do, this has been a tough time for the restaurant industry. I'm proud to work with some of the top restaurateurs in the region. We opened 3 new restaurants in 2020, Kevin, amidst of the crisis. One of them, Alber on 53 in Hanover. If you've not been, a great addition to the South Shore dining scene. Easily the biggest, most successful restaurant opening in Greater Boston of the COVID era. There's an Alber, kind of an old fine dining landmark in Quincy Center. This is a new location and opened in August 2020. Alber on 53, right on Route 53 in Hanover. Another one we helped open, Boardwalk Pizza. It's not bar pizza, but Boardwalk Pizza in Marina Bay. The owners are the Frateroli family. They're the first family of the North End, founders of the Chase of the North End. They own Victory Point in Marina Bay. during the crisis. They're like, how are we going to survive? They turned storage area into two new eateries, a gelato place, Donato's Gelato, and Boardwalk Pizza, some of the best pizza you've ever had, real traditional thin crust Italian pizza. In the Boardwalk style, they created a whole new style of pizza meant to be consumed on the seaside. And so if you want to try a new pizza, also check out, you know, Boardwalk Pizza, Donato's Gelato, Elbron 53, a lot of great new additions to the local dining scene.
I want to thank you for being a guest.
Thank you, Kevin, as always.
And we will look forward to talking with you again real soon. Again, you've been tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. That is all the time that they have allotted me. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great night.